Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome. Shmuel Plotzker coming at you live from Goffman Synagogue, our School of Jewish Studies here in Cincinnati, Ohio, as we continue our study of Ema Bonim Smecha. You know, people, we are on page 436. That's an incredible thing. And as I may have said last week, we basically do roughly 10 pages a shot per class, roughly, and that means that we are actually on schedule for completing the book on or around Dalad B'Adar Beis. And my father's yahrzeit is Hey B'Adar. And so what I'd like to do is finish the book on Dalad B'Adar and have a little siyum that evening. So let's see how that goes. If you've got the book, let's get right to it. If you have the book, we're on page 436. And we are now going to look at something called an essay, The Sanctuary of Hashem. And, you know, there's a footnote over here in the Lichtenstein translation. This is little chapter, Roman numeral 13. Essay, The Sanctuary of Hashem. And the footnote is, the major thesis of this essay is that man will build the future temple first, and then Hashem will lower a supernal spiritual temple upon that. It's written in extremely complex halachic language. Only someone who truly studies this essay, including the sources quoted, will fully understand it. Also, most of the ideas mentioned in the essay are not directly related to the rest of the book. It's essentially a separate entity. Therefore, some readers may choose to skip it on the first reading and continue with page 457. There's a lot of truth to that footnote. I looked over this material last night, and there comes to a point in the essay where it becomes very bogged down in halachic, you know, lamdashi yeshivisha kind of a talk, and there's a stira between Rashi and Tosfos here and Rashi Tosfos there, and how do we understand it, and the Omer, and it becomes very, very learned, and we might just lose people's attention. So we're not going to get into that exceptionally rarefied talk. Instead, we'll do the first 5 or 10 pages of it. This essay goes for 20 pages. We'll do 5 or 10 pages, and that really should be sufficient for us, believe it or not. I mean, really, this just really is going to have to be, because anything more, this kind of class, this kind of format, does not lend itself to all that kind of lumdership talk. You got to sit down and haravin it and open up the sources, as he says, and learn up the Omer and see the Rashi inside, Tysus inside. It's not for us. But the first few pages are definitely for us, and we will definitely do the first 5 or 10, and that'll be as if we did all 20, and we'll still be able to make a siyum holding our heads up high. We'll have seen 515 pages inside, maybe not 520 pages inside, but that's okay too. It's fine. Let's get started. Essay, The Sanctuary of Hashem. In the left-hand side, the footnote, the margin says, we will build the earthly temple and God will lower the supernal one upon it. This is not all that terribly difficult or esoteric. We could certainly read this and understand it. At least I hope so. He writes, in the book of Ezra, chapter 6, verse 16, the book of Ezra states as follows, they celebrated the dedication of this temple with joy. Again, they celebrated the dedication of this temple with joy. The Malbim cites earlier sages, whom he calls the Kadmonim, who explained the expression, this temple. What do you mean, this temple? They dedicated the dedication of the temple. What other temple was it? Obviously, it wasn't the first one. That was destroyed. And any other future temple, I'm not even sure if they thought about that. So, this temple, why say this one? Why specify it? And the Malbim cites these earlier sages, and here's their explanation. Had they been worthy at that time, in the time of Ezra, the ultimate redemption would have arrived. There would have been a Geula Shlema, and a Beis HaMikdash like the one that Yechezkel foresaw, that Ezekiel Beis Medrash would have descended from heaven immediately after this edifice, the second temple, was completed. And you'll find that Yechezkel temple and its details and its architectural structure given to us in chapters 40 to 43 in the book of Ezekiel. So amazingly, these kadmonim that the Malbim is citing say that had they been worthy, the Geula Shlema, the complete redemption, would have taken place in the time of Ezra. It would have been just that second temple. And that would have led to the Ezekielian divine temple. That would have descended from the heavens, from Shemayim, that Yechezkel Beis HaMikdash would have come down, right on top of, apparently, the second temple. Now I'm on the top of page 437. I'm now on the top of 437. Okay? So it would have descended from the heavens immediately after the second Beis HaMikdash was completed. Then they would have begun the second dedication mentioned in Ezekiel, chapter 43, verse 18 and onwards. And that would have been amazing, right? 2,400 years ago, there would have been a Geula Shlema. For the time being, though, they made the dedication of this temple. And that explains the wording of this temple. The word this indicates that they anticipated the dedication of another temple. So, okay, that answers my question. Indeed, according to this diak, according to this very exacting reading, when you see the word this temple, they're obviously thinking about this second one, but they are not considering, they're dedicating this one, and only this one, the second temple, but in truth, they're also anticipating a third one down the road. But right now, they're working on this one. And this is all the Malbim. Behold, Yechezkel's dedication will begin on the 23rd of Adar, as explained there. See the Malbim Yechezkel 43, chapter 43, verse 27, and see Malbim and Yechezkel, chapter 45, verse 18. So it's 43:27 and 45:18. Back to the Malbim. Behold, Yechezkel's dedication will begin on the 23rd day of Adar, as explained there in Yechezkel. The dedication at the time of Ezra lasted 21 days until the 23rd of Adar. Had they been worthy, the dedication of the final temple, which will be built by Hashem, would have ensued immediately. So again, the dedication of Ezra and his men, that took 3 weeks, 21 days, and it concluded on the 23rd of Adar. At that point, Yechezkel's dedication would have begun on the 23rd of Adar, and it would have moved seamlessly from man's creation of the second and final temple to this divine Yechezkel temple descending from heaven over and on top of it, of the second temple, and that would have been the Messianic period. Wow. Now, since the festive and joyous days, he continues, this is the Malbim, being quoted by our author. Now, since the festive and joyous days of Purim fell out during those days, the verse states that their main joy came from the dedication, which was even more joyous than Purim. And Purim was big, because Purim was extremely relevant. It was almost contemporaneous around that time. But this dedication of the Beis HaMikdash was eclipsing even that. Wow. And now our author picks it up. It is evident from these kadmonim, from these earlier sages, that even though God will build the future temple, we will build a Beis HaMikdash with our own hands first. Hashem is going to build the future temple. So it always was a question. Who builds the temple? And the answer is, well, everybody. First, Jewish people have to. And then God gets into the act and he brings down his Beis HaMikdash on top of it. Okay? First we build it, and then the hoped for heaven-made edifice will descend. He writes, I found the same idea in the holy work, Aspaklaria HaMe'ira, the clear vision, the clear seeing. Aspaklaria HaMe'ira. The rabbis talk about how Moshe Rabbeinu had an aspaklaria mehira. He was able to see the Almighty to the extent that a human being can at the highest level possible for a human being. He had an aspaklaria mehira, a clear vision of God. Everybody else, all the other prophets had an aspaklaria lomahira, lobahira. Actually, bahira, that does mean clarity. This is aspaklaria hameira, the enlightening vision. At all events, I found the same idea in the holy work, aspaklaria hameira, and here's what he writes in that book. The Talmud states, this is such an interesting idea. This Gemara in Bava Kamma is fascinating. Hashem said, I must pay for the fire that I set. Listen to what Hashem said. Listen to this interesting, beautiful midrash. Hashem says, you know, I got to make right by what I did. I set fire to my own Beis HaMikdash. I've got to redeem that. The Holy One says, I must pay for the fire that I set. I kindled a fire in Zion, as the Pasuk says in Echa, in Lamentations. He kindled a fire in Zion, and it has consumed its foundations. That's to be found in Lamentations, Echa, chapter 4, verse 11. Hashem says, I kindled a fire in Zion, and it consumed its foundations. So Hashem says in the future as well, I will build it. I will build Zion with fire. If I destroyed Zion, Zion with fire, I'm going to rebuild Zion with fire. As it says, a pasuk in Zechariah, chapter 2, verse 9, and I will be for it a wall of fire round about, and I will be in its midst for glory. See the Gemara in Bava Kamma 60b, where this is all quoted from. But an incredibly beautiful thought, that the Almighty says, you know what? I burnt up my temple with fire. I'm going to rebuild the temple with fire. I'm going to rebuild Zion with fire. And I'm going to be in the midst of the fire. How beautiful is this idea? So beautiful. And these psukim, they're just unbelievable. I mean, we have such a schus. In today's day and age, people, I don't want to beschmutz everybody out there, but it's rare that anybody learns Tanakh these days. Now it is. It's just not on the, unless you're a girl in a Beis Yaakov program, you're just not going to be learning any Tanakh. For most boys, it ends at or around Shmuel Beis. They never see Malachim, and they certainly never see the later Nevi'im. Yirmiyah, Yecheskel, Yeshaya, I mean, these are closed books. Treyaser, these are all closed books for most yeshiva guys. It's a sad thing for people who dedicate their entire lives learning Torah to never see chunks and chunks of the actual Bible is remarkable. And to only know about Isaiah and Jeremiah because there's a pasuk in Bava Kamma, because there's a pasuk in, quoted in, it's treated in Psachim. We got to do better than that. At all events, I think that we are doing better than that. I think here we are studying a book, and there's always another beautiful pasuk from one of the Nevi'im. So slowly but surely, I mean, we are kind of doing it the same way. We're learning the psukim of the Tanakh through the Sefer. But listen, you do what you can. I encourage everybody to study the Tanakh on its own. Give it its own study and utilize the Mefarshim, the Gemaras, the Midrashim as commentary upon it. That's a fabulous way to learn it. And that's what we try to do in our Tanakh class in Melachim Aleph in 1 Kings. Similarly, the Zohar says that the Almighty will build a future temple himself, that Hashem is going to build a future temple himself. As it is written, God is the builder of Jerusalem. That's the pasuk in Psalms, in Tehillim 147, verse 2. See the Zohar, Parshas Pinchas, chapter 3, subsection 221a. Galanti, I don't even know who that is, cites the Zohar in Parshas Pekudei, chapter 2, subsection 240a. Galanti cites the Zohar, which says that not all of the stones and foundations of the first temple were destroyed. Some of them were hidden away. In the future, the Holy One will build the Beis HaMikdash from these very stones. Can you believe that? That's an amazing thought. Now, yes, I mean, there is some idea that there are tunnels and so on that were beneath the first Beis HaMikdash. In the event that a king had to run away, there was some, you know, underground tunnels that he'd be able to use. But this is really just a beautiful thought that the Zohar brings down, that not all the stones and foundations of the first base of the Mikdash were destroyed. Some were hidden away. And what an incredibly comforting idea. In the future, the Almighty will build the base of Mikdash from these very stones. Wow. So there's this idea in the Zohar that God's going to build the future temple himself. It's not so pasha, we're going to see in a second, who's going to build the base of Mikdash. But we'll see. Now there's a footnote here. The footnote on the idea that in the future God will build the base of Mikdash from these very stones. Here's the footnote. Using this, Galanti explains the pasuk in Haggai, chapter 2, verse 9. The glory of this latter temple will be greater than the first one. The glory of this latter temple will be greater than the first one. Haggai, chapter 2, verse 9. Now, why doesn't it say that the glory of this latter temple will be greater than the first ones in the plural, since two temples were destroyed? Why doesn't it say that? Based on the Zohar, though, the verse is ever so sweet. Here's the answer we're given. It tells us that none of the stones of the first edifice were lost. The future temple will be built with these very stones. Thus it says, the glory of this latter temple, the Beis HaMikdash, the final one, the third one, will be greater than the first one, Min HaRishon, meaning the later temple, the last one, the third, will be built from the same stones as the first one. And Min HaRishon can also be translated, he writes, as from the first one. Min HaRishon will be greater from the first one, because it will be built with the rocks of the first one. And that's why, I guess it doesn't say anything about the second one, because the third and final Beis HaMikdash will be built with the stones of the very first temple. All right, here we go. I now turn to the top of 438. And this is a continuation of the Aspaklaria HaMe'ira. Behold, according to the Zohar, in Parshas Pekudei, the temple will be built with man-made stones. The Beis HaMikdash will be built with man-made stones, not those made by the Almighty. When Hashem, you know, obviously Hashem created rocks and stones when he created the world. I get that too. But we're trying to differentiate between a man-made temple and a divinely made temple. Excuse me. So the man-made temple that we're going, well, we haven't really gotten to that idea yet. Now, there's an idea that we're going to build a base of Mikdash, and then Hashem will, yeah, we did touch on that. That had they been worthy in Ezra's time, then the man-made temple that was built in Ezra's time would have been capped off with a divinely made base of Mikdash. Okay, let's get back to this idea. So hold that idea. Top 438. Behold, according to the Zohar, the temple will be built with man-made stones, not those made by the Holy One. This contradicts the Talmud and Bava Kamma and the Zohar cited above, which imply that it will actually be made by God. So what's it going to be? Is the temple going to be made with man-made stones? What does that mean? Bricks? Man-made bricks? Perforce, we must introduce a third and deciding opinion. The Medrash Psikta, and they were unable to locate the source. That's not good. It says there that the Holy One will lower the supernal Jerusalem upon the earthly one. Imagine that. Imagine that there's a heavenly Yerushalayim that's going to come down upon the earthly Yerushalayim. He writes, thus both Midrashim are true. The supernal temple, the divinely made, heaven-sent Beis HaMikdash temple will be made entirely of fire, the handiwork of the Almighty. The earthly one will be man-made from the crowning stones which sparkle on the ground since the days of King Shlomo. See Aspaklaria Me'ira on the Zohar, chapter 2, subsection 114a. Look for the word he. Wow. So you've got this idea that the earthly one's going to be made man-made, and then God's going to send his divinely made temple made entirely of fire to capstone the man-made one. Writes Rabbi Teichtal, and that's the end of the quote of the Asbaklaria. Excuse me. So writes Rabbi Teichtal, I'm astounded that our mentor, the author of Asbaklaria Meira, made this distinction on his own, based on the Psikta. For behold, it is stated explicitly in Tikkuni Zohar. Here comes the Tikkuni Zohar. Quote, at that time, the house of the Shekhinah, which is the Beis HaBechira, the chosen house, the temple, will be built by the Almighty, about whom it says, and there's that pasuk in Zechariah, chapter 2, verse 9, and I will be for it, says God, a wall of fire round about. And its stones, va'avaneha, what about the stones? Well, these are the precious stones from which it will be built. As it is written, pasuk in Bereishis, that I too may be built up, v'ibaneh, through her. That I too may be built up through her. And that's, of course, Sarah talking to Abraham that he should take Hagar, if I'm not mistaken. She says, listen, take the second woman and I'll be built up through her. That I too may be built up through her sacred plants. That's the Drish, the Netian Kadishan. That I may be built up through her sacred plants. And the footnote says, a reference to some deep Kabbalistic concept. It's beyond the scope of this translation to explain such references. I agree with that. I mean, you got to just kind of know when to hold them and know when to fold them. I mean, you can't explain every single thing, and this is not a Kabbalah class. We continue. The Beis HaMikdash will be built of silver, gold, and precious stones. It will be embroidered with every image of creation. And the light of the uppermost Yerushalayim will be above it, embroidered with every shade of light. The secret of the matter is in the verse, I'm on the top of 439. The secret of the matter is in the pasuk, the built up Yerushalayim is like a city that is joined together. Yerushalayim habenuya ki'ir shechubra lo yachtav. The built-up Yerushalayim is like a city that is joined together. Tehillim 122, Psalm 122, verse 3. For its light is above it. And I think I'm beginning to see where this is going. This Tikkuni Zohar on Tikkun 21. In Tikkun 21, page 60b. The built-up Yerushalayim, what does that mean, the built-up Yerushalayim? I'm going to just go out on a limb over here. The built-up Yerushalayim means Yerushalayim when it's finally redeemed during Mashiach's time. The futuristic Yerushalayim, what's that going to be like? Well, the built-up Yerushalayim is like a city that is joined together. And I understand that to mean joined together. It's going to be joined together in the future when Mashiach comes, or soon thereafter, when Hashem is going to combine, when he's going to join together the man-made Jerusalem and the divinely made Jerusalem. So if I had a darshan this pasuk, that's what I would say. The built-up Yerushalayim is like a city that is joined together. In the future, Mashiach's time, Yerushalayim is going to be both the earthly Yerushalayim and the divine Yerushalayim. Top 439. Sorry, it's not the company. I just need a little bit of oxygen. The author of Kisei Melech comments on the statement, the Beis HaMikdash will be built with silver and gold, etc., and precious stones. The author of Kisei Melech writes, this earthly Beis HaMikdash will also be a magnificent edifice, decorated with every image of creation. Then the spiritual light of the supernal Yerushalayim will descend upon it. the spiritual then, when you've got this beautiful edifice, this earthly base of Mikdash, decorated with every possible image that's appropriate, then the spiritual light of the divine heavenly Yerushalayim will descend upon it. It seems to me, writes our Rabbi Tayach Tel, our author, it seems to me that when the Tikkuni Zohar states, and its stones, these are the precious stones from which it will be built, that he means that it will be built with the stones of the first temple, as the Zohar asserts. That's what it means. And its stones, these are the precious stones from which it will be built. Wow. It means the first temple stones. Hence, everything that the author of Aspaklaria Meira said above is stated explicitly in the Tikkuni Zohar. I'm very surprised at him, if he was one of the greatest Kabbalists of the earlier generations. How did he neglect to mention this Tikkuni Zohar? In any event, there is no contradiction between the Zohar in Parshas Pinchas and the Talmud in Parshas Pekudei. I'm sorry. There is no contradiction between the Zohar and Parshas Pinchas and the Talmud and Bava Kamma on the one hand, which imply that the future temple will be built by God, and the Zohar and Parshas Pekudei, which implies it will be man-made. Both are true. Man will build the earthly temple first, and afterwards, the divine supernal temple will descend upon it. That's a neat and clean explanation, and it sounds good to me. So we get a chance to build what we've got to build, and then Hashem builds what he's got to build. While I was speaking with my beloved friend, the great Gaon, Prince of the Torah, our revered master, Rabbi Yitzchak Weisschlita, Rabbi and our Bezdin of Verba, he added the pasuk, I will be for it, says God, a wall of fire round about. That's the Zechariah pasuk of chapter 2, verse 9. That pasuk alludes to all of this. I'm on the top of 440. The words round about seem to be unnecessary. Based on the above, however, it's very well understood. Man will build the earthly base of Mikdash, and then the fiery, supernal base of Mikdash will descend upon it and surround it. So you got that, kids? First, the Jewish people will build the earthly base of Mikdash, and then Hashem is going to capstone that with a divine, Yechezkel-oriented-looking base of Mikdash that's going to be placed right on top of it. Certainly something to look forward to. Top of 440. When I arrived here in the capital of Budapest, I briefly obtained a copy of Drishas Tzion by the brilliant Rabbi Hirsch Kalischer. Sometimes he writes Rabbi Tzvi Kalischer, over here Rabbi Hirsch Kalischer. It's the same person. The author of the Drishas Tzion was Rabbi Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer, who was born in the late 1700s and lived into the mid to late 1800s. And he wrote a book called Drishas Tzion. In it, I found a response by the brilliant author of the Aruch Haner, in which the Aruch Haner also determines that Israel will build the earthly base of Mikdash first, and afterwards the divine heavenly one will descend upon it. See the Drishas Tzion in the Masada Rav Kook edition, pages 97 and 98. And pages 157 to 160. So that's good. I didn't even know that the Masada Rav Kook has put out that sefer already, with a, you know, in a scholarly way, with footnotes and everything that it needs to be able to be explicated. Okay. Here we go. God will build the first temple. And just he reiterates this concept in Aruch Haner and uses it to explain the Midrash quoted by Rashi and Tosfos, which states that God will build the future temple. See the Tanchuma on Kisisa 13, which is to say God will build the supernal base of Mikdash and place it upon the earthly one. Also, in the above-cited responsa, he explains the words round about, the words in the pasuk in Zechariah, where Hashem says he's going to be a wall of fire round about. So the words round about, the Aruch Lanier explains those words the same way Rabbi Weiss does. However, the brilliant Aruch Lanier does not mention the Tikkuni Zohar or the Aspaklaria Mehira. Had he seen their words, he would have been overjoyed to know that he concurs with them. Okay, new little paragraph, new little subsection. And this one is titled, The Earthly Temple Will Be Built Before Mashiach Arrives. We may have already seen this earlier in the book. A little bit of review. The earthly Beis Hamikdash will be will be built before Mashiach arrives. It seems clear, he writes, that the earthly man-made temple will be built before Mashiach comes. First, Jews will gather in the land of Israel with the permission of the kings. Then, the earthly Beis Hamikdash will be built. It's possible that the merit of the masses will help reveal the hidden stones. Afterwards, Mashiach will arrive, and then the supernal Beis Hamikdash will descend upon the earthly one. Wow. Think of that vision. Think about how that's going to look. This is evident from the following psikta. Our rabbis taught, when the Messianic king reveals himself, he will stand on the roof of the Beis Hamikdash and proclaim to Israel, O humble ones, the time for your redemption has come. If you don't believe me, behold God's light that is shown upon you. As it says, arise, shine, for your light has come, and the glory of God has shone upon you. See Isaiah chapter 60, verse 1. And this is in the Pisgah, known as Kumi Ori. So when the Mashiach reveals himself, he stands on the roof of the Beis Hamikdash, and he proclaims to Israel, O humble ones, and this is a Yehuda Green song, Anovim, Anovim, very popular in Israel a year or so ago. The time for your redemption has come. You don't believe me? Hashem's light has shone upon you. Beautiful. Cannot wait to see this. Top of page 441. Our mentor, Rabbi Ephraim Zalman Margolis, comments in his Zera Ephraim, he will stand on the roof of the Beis HaMikdash. He, the Mashiach, will stand on the roof of the Beis HaMikdash. The Yerushalmi in Maaseh Sheni, chapter 5, halacha 2, quoted in the Tosfos Yom Tov, asserts that the Beis HaMikdash will be built 40 years before Mashiach comes. Therefore, quote, he will stand on the roof of the Beis HaMikdash, could very well be taken literally, because the Beis HaMikdash will be built, as we said months and months ago, maybe a year ago, the Beis HaMikdash will be built 40 years before Mashiach comes. Wow, that's an incredible thing. So we got to start getting on that project. The question is, how exactly do we wind up doing that without triggering World War III, meaning, you know, every Arab on God's green earth, you know, even the good ones, trying to track down Jews to kill them all. I mean, it's a lot to ask. Okay, so that's the end of Zera Ephraim. He writes, thus it is explicit that the earthly Beis HaMikdash will be built before Mashiach comes. And here, he quotes Rabbi Hoffman. Let's get some fresh air in here. Here he quotes Rabbi Hoffman as follows. Here's a footnote. The brilliant rabbi and master Rabbi Moshe Shimon Hoffman, the rabbi of the Orthodox synagogue here in Budapest, showed me the following Tosefta. Tosefta Pesachim, chapter 8. Halacha 2, or Tosefta 2, Kapitel 2. If Israel is granted permission to build the Beis HaBechira, wow, if Israel is granted permission to build the Beis HaBechira, who's going to grant permission in this day and age? What Muslim sheikh or imam is going to say, okay, the Jews, they want to build it, I'll go right ahead. You can go ahead and wipe out a big mosque over there. Who, after all, why not? I mean, I know there are going to be miracles in the end of the days, but a miracle that big? This I want to see. If Israel, according to the Tosefta Pesachim, if Israel is granted permission to build the base of Bechira. Dot, dot, dot. Excuse me. After seeing this, he writes, I am surprised that the Minchas Chinuch asserts independently that we have a mitzvah to build a base of Mikdash if the kingdoms allow us to do so. You did not realize that the Tosefta states this explicitly. It doesn't have to come down to like, oh, it's a Minchas Chinuch that says it. No, it's a Tosefta that says it. In any event, this source also implies that we will build a third temple. Wow, wow, wow. All right? To sum up, he writes, everyone agrees that we will build the earthly base on Mikdash first, and afterwards the supernal one will descend upon it. The Malbim citing Kadmonim, the Tikkuni Zohar, and the Aspaklaria HaMehira. Perhaps the latter two are the Kadmonim to whom the Malbim referred. Or perhaps he saw other Kadmonim. In any event, the author of Aruch Lener also agrees with them. And here's yet another footnote. Behold, the Kadmonim cited by the Malbim assert that had the Jews of Ezra's time been worthy, the supernal future base of Mikdash would have immediately descended, and the final redemption would have arrived. Yes, we read that. It seems to me, says Rabbi Teichtal, that the worthiness mentioned here refers to the Talmud statement that the miracle of the complete redemption should have occurred at the time of Ezra, but sin prevented it. See the Gemara in Brachos 4a. The Maharsha explains that the sin was their failure to ascend to Israel en masse. That's the failure of the Jewish people back in Ezra's time, that they failed to ascend to Israel en masse. That's also our failure of the 20th century. However, right now, as we say, the Rov Minyan or Vinyan of Klal Yisrael is slowly tipping, if it hasn't already, and the majority of Jewish population in the world, the majority of the Jews living out in the world is now in Israeli, under Israeli jurisdiction. There are about 15 million Jews in the world, about 7.5 million or so, or 7.75 million, maybe even up to 8 million Jews in Israel, with about 1 million Muslims and a smattering of Christians. So that means, and then that does clock in at about 9 million people, which is what the state of Israel has right now, about 9 million people. So I was just wondering, even though the masses, the majority of the Jewish people did not emigrate to Israel en masse during the 20th century, but still in all here in the 21st century, now the majority of the population of world Jewry is to be found in Israel. Does that count? Can we overcome? The question is, can we overcome any potential sins which we as a people may have done by not being Ola to Israel? Is it possible that we did a tikkun, that we did some sort of correction on that, because by virtue of the fact that there are a majority of Jews now in Israel? Okay. We continue on. We're still on page 441. We only have three lines left in the actual text in 441. He writes, I believe that this matter is alluded to in the Pasuk. Therefore, says God, I have returned to Yerushalayim with mercy. My house will be rebuilt in it, says God, and a line will be stretched forth over Yerushalayim. That's a pasuk in Zechariah chapter 1, verse 16. And I'm on the top now of page 442. So the pasuk in Zechariah 1:16 says, I have returned to Yerushalayim with mercy. My house will be rebuilt in it, says God, and a line will be stretched forth over Yerushalayim. This means that man will first build a house, that is, the earthly temple in Yerushalayim. Afterwards, a line will be stretched forth over Yerushalayim, meaning the divine supernal base of Mikdash will descend upon it. I never would have thought that. I mean, I understand. My house will be rebuilt in it. I get that. But then the words, and a line will be stretched forth over Yerushalayim, never would have thought that that means that's referring to the divinely made Ezekiel-oriented Beis Hamikdash. That'll capstone our efforts here, okay? Page 442, and where it says on the left-hand side, who will build the future temple, God or Tzaddikim? And that's the question we've got to deal with over here right now. This is subsection Pei Aleph. Know and understand that the preceding idea answers an enormous question which I posed in my youth. And over here, I think that we can do some work. It's going to be a discussion about the hand of God, the number of hands. Okay? Know that the preceding idea answers an enormous question which I posed in my youth. Printed in my responsa, Mishnah Sacher, chapter 1, subsection 34. Rashi and Tosfos write that Hashem will build the future temple, as it is written, and it's based upon a pasuk in Shemos of all things. The sanctuary, O God, that your hands have established. Shemos, Exodus 15, verse 17. And see the Gemara in Sukkah 41a. See Rashi and Tosfos over there. He's quoting Rashi and Tosfos, who say that Hashem will build the future temple. The sanctuary, O God, that your hands have established. Note your hands. This is difficult, for it contradicts their own commentary elsewhere. The Talmud states in Ksubas 5a, Bar Kapara expounded as follows. The deeds of the righteous are greater than the creation of heaven and earth. That's an incredible thing to say, that the deeds of human beings are greater than the creations of God. I never would have thought this. Regarding the creation of heaven and earth, it says, also my hand has laid the foundation of the earth. A pasuk in Isaiah chapter 48, verse 13, my hand has laid the foundation of the earth. Yet regarding the handiwork of the righteous, what does it say about the handiwork of the righteous? There it says in Shemos, Exodus 15, verse 17, we just read it, your dwelling place that you have made, O God, the sanctuary, O God, that your hands have established. And note the plural, your hands. And there in Ksubas, Rashi and Tosfos comment, the sanctuary is the handiwork of the righteous. Thus, it is evident that the righteous will build it, not God. So according to the Rashi and Tosfos in the Gemara and Ksubas 5a, it seems that the Beis HaMikdash is going to be the handiwork of human beings. At least according to Rashi and Tosfos. Even though the Pasuk says explicitly, your dwelling place that you made, O God, the sanctuary, O God, that your hands established, I have no idea. Frankly, I simply have no idea why it is that Rashi and Tosfos feel that those magic words, your dwelling place that you made, sanctuary that your hands established, how does that refer to human beings? How's it done? How's that work? I don't know. Truth be told, I'm just not sure. And yet that seems to be how they understand that Gemara over there in Ksubas, based upon the pasuk in Exodus chapter 15, verse 17. Rashi and Tosfos comment, the sanctuary is the handiwork of the righteous. Thus it is evident that the righteous will build it, not God. And yet, earlier, Rashi tells us right that God will build the future temple. As it says, the sanctuary of God that your hands have established. So which is it? Is it God or people? Now the Maharsha writes that the righteous refers to Bezalel and his colleagues who built the Mishkan. see the Maharsha in Ksubas 5a, the word Gedolim. The Maharsha writes that the righteous refers to Bezalel and his colleagues who built the Mishkan. According to this, the future temple could be built by God, and there is no contradiction at all. However, there is still a question based on Rashi's commentary in Parshas Bishalach. On the verse, the sanctuary, O God, that your hands have established. Pasuk in Shemos, and Bishalach is our upcoming Parsha of the week. How appropriate is that? And it's my Bar Mitzvah Parsha. I was born on Tes B'Shvat. That seems to be coming up, if it's not here already. My English birthday is February 3. You can email me good happy birthday wishes to paulplotsker@gmail. PaulPlotsker, paulplotsker@gmail. Let me know if anybody's out there actually listening to this. On the verse, the sanctuary of God that your hands have established, Rashi writes, the Beis HaMikdash is beloved, for the world was created with only one hand. As it says, my hand has laid the foundation of the earth. But the Beis HaMikdash will be built with two hands. When will it be built with two hands? When, and here's a quote, Hashem Yimloch, God will reign, le'olam vad, forever and ever. A verse in Exodus chapter 15, verse 18. So when is it going to be built with two hands? In the future, when kingship is God's, when Hashem becomes the king over the whole world, and everybody recognizes it. Thus Rashi writes explicitly that the future temple will be built with two hands. And I'm on the top of page 443. Rashi writes explicitly, the future Beis HaMikdash will be built with two hands, and it's clear from Ksubas 5a that two hands refers to the handiwork of the righteous, not that of God. I don't see why. I don't understand. Hashem says, he's going to build it. He's going to build it. I'm not sure. Your dwelling place that you have made, God, the sanctuary, God, that your hands established. How is it that two hands suddenly refers to human beings? So Rashi contradicts himself in Gemara and Sukkah. Let me write that down. Sukkah 41a. In Sukkah 41a, Rashi says, God's going to build a future Beis HaMikdash. And over here, Ksubas 5a, Rashi writes, the righteous will build a Beis HaMikdash. So which is it? Top of page 443, my voice is going out. So how about if we just do a little bit more? It cannot possibly be pleasant to listen to. You know what? How about this? How about we just kind of do this page 443 and over to the top of 444 where there's a small little new subchapter and we'll call it a day. And we'll have done some work. 443. In my response to Mishnah Sacher, Rabbi Tachtel writes, I answered based on Rashi's comments on the Pasuk, the sanctuary of God that your hands have established. He explains that the word sanctuary, mikdash, is marked by a zaketh gadol cantillation to separate it from the word Hashem, which follows it. In effect, then, the verse says, the sanctuary that your hands have established, O God, implying that God will build it. Nonetheless, it says, your hands have established. That is to say, two hands, which refers to the handiwork of the righteous, according to the Ksubas, although I still don't understand why. Now, Rashi's source is the Mechilta on Bishalach, Parshas Hashira, chapter 10. Thus, we must say that the Mechilta disagrees with Bar Kappara's teaching, which distinguishes between the handiwork of the righteous and that of God. Excuse me. That's indeed what Bar Kappara said. Remember that Bar Kappara said that the deeds of the righteous are greater than the creation of heaven and earth. Regarding creation of heaven and earth, it says one hand. God says my hand in the singular. But regarding the hands and work of the righteous, it says your dwelling place that you made, O God, the sanctuary that your hands established. Why those words, which seem to clearly, explicitly refer to God as the creator, and suddenly we're attributing them to human beings? I'll never understand that. The righteous that you made, God. I mean, the whole thing makes no sense to me. Okay, again. Now, Rashi sources the Mechilta and Beshalach. Thus, we must say that the Mechilta disagrees with Bar Kappara's teaching, which distinguishes between the handiwork of the righteous and that of God. Instead, the Mechilta makes a different distinction, as Rashi cites there. Quote, the Beis HaMikdash is beloved. For the world was created with only one hand. As it says, my hand has laid the foundation of the earth. But the Beis HaMikdash will be built with two hands. When will it be built with two hands? When, the words are in Pasuk, when Hashem Yimloch El Amved, when God will reign forever and ever. In the future, when kingship is his. That is to say, the Mechilta distinguishes between the building of the sanctuary and the creation of the world. However, when it comes to something as beloved as the future Beis HaMikdash, even God will use two hands. Bar Kappara, on the other hand, distinguishes between the handiwork of the righteous and that of God, not between that which is beloved, the Beis HaMikdash, and that which is not, the world. Bar Kappara derives this from the fact that it says about the Beis HaMikdash, your hands have established. Therefore, he clearly does not hold that Hashem will build the future Beis HaMikdash. Rather, the righteous will build it with two hands. This is why Rashi writes in Gemara Sukkah that God will build the future temple. If he is following his own line of reasoning, which follows the Mechilta. But according to Bar Kappara, it will be man-made. Top of 444. I also use this to explain the Rambam's opinion. He implies that the temple will be man-made because he holds like Bar Kappara. This is what I wrote when I was young. But now I believe that the Mechilta and Bar Kappara do not necessarily disagree. Instead, we can answer our question simply. The earthly Beis HaMikdash will be built first. Afterwards, the divine Beis HaMikdash will descend upon it and they will unite. Thus, the work of the righteous will also be involved. This is unlike the creation of heaven and earth, in which only the Almighty was involved. Over here, human beings and God will be involved. Therefore, only one hand is mentioned when it comes to the creation of heaven and earth. Only God was involved. The future edifice, though, will also include the work of the righteous. Therefore, the verse mentions two hands, one hand belonging to God, one hand belonging to the righteous. This answer is very fitting. So, my dear friends, let's call it a day. I know it's a little bit before 2 o'clock. But we knocked off our 10 pages or so. And we're on page 444. Slowly but surely inching there. I got to give my voice a little rest. I want to thank everybody for showing up today. God willing, you should be well. Gesund. And I hope my voice will be better for tomorrow's class. I wish everybody a very safe, productive, prosperous week. Hopefully we'll see some of you tomorrow night at our Tanakh class. Have a great day as well. And we're slowly inching our way towards the Siyum, hopefully in mid-March, on around Dalabi Adabays of this year. All the best. Take care and be well. Bye now.